Oh. You mean, if these keepers get one of us?
A Marat can live for weeks buried in the crouch, Aleron.
Tavi felt sick. You don't rescue them?
Kitai flashed him a look, his eyes hard, cool. Then, in a few silent strides, paced over to the crow. He drew his knife, reached down, and slashed the blade over the surface of the lump. With a swift, curt motion, he reached down for the crow's neck and drew it from the clinging goo of the crouch. Parts of the bird peeled and sloughed away, like meat from a roast that had been cooked to tender perfection in a carefully tended oven. It let out a rasping sound, but its beak never attempted to close. Its eyes blinked once and then went glassy.
That takes only hours, Kitai said, and dropped the remains back near the slit in the wax. Do you see, Aleron?
Tavi stared at the ground, sickened. I see. Kitai grimaced at him. He turned and started pacing away, following the wall of stone again.
We must move. The keepers will come to investigate the break you made and put the rest of the crow back. We should not be here when they arrive.
No, Tavi whispered. I guess we sh- In the trees, Tavi saw something move. It was indistinct at first. Just a lump in the wax on the trunk of the tree. But it shuddered and twitched with life. Tavi thought for a moment that a piece of the crouch had broken from the tree trunk and would fall to earth. It had a lumpy shape, and coursed with the same luminous green fluid as the rest of the wax. But as the Aleran boy watched, legs writhed free of the lump's sides. Something like a head emerged from a shell-like coating of the crouch, pale eyes round and huge. All in all, 8 knobby, many-jointed legs stretched free of the thing's body. And then, with a quiet, horrible grace, it paced down the trunk of the tree and across the floor of the forest to the break in the surface of the crouch, where greenish-glowing fluid bubbled and seethed like blood in an open wound. A wax spider, a keeper of silence. Silent and strange and the size of a large dog. Tavi stared at it, his heart pounding in his chest, and felt his eyes widening. He shot a glance to Kitai, who had also frozen and was staring at the keeper. The creature bent down and spread wide a set of smooth mandibles at the base of its head. It scooped up pieces of the crow, and using its foremost set of legs, tucked them back into the open wound in the crouch. Then it hovered over the slash, several of its legs working back and forth over it in swift, methodical movements, sealing the wax closed over the carcass. Tavi shot a glance back at Kitai, who motioned to Tavi and then covered his own mouth with his hand, a clear command to be silent. Tavi nodded and turned toward Kitai. The Marat's eyes widened in alarm, and he held up his hands, palms out, to tell Tavi to stop. Tavi froze. Behind him, the quiet rustle of the keeper's limbs over the wax had come to a halt. From the corner of his eye, Tavi could just see it gather all its limbs beneath it again, bobbing up and down in restless agitation. It began to emit a series of high-pitched chirrups, not quite like a bird's voice, or anything else Tavi had ever heard. The sound made shivers slither down the length of his body. After a moment, the keeper appeared to go back to its work. Kitai turned toward Tavi, his motions very, very slow, graceful. He gestured toward Tavi with his hand, every movement smooth and circular and rolling, exaggerated. Then he turned and began to walk away, silent and slow, his steps flowing almost as though in a dance. Tavi swallowed and turned to follow Kitai, struggling to emulate the Marat boy's steps. Kitai walked before him, close to the stone wall of the chasm, and Tavi followed until they were several dozen yards away from the keeper. Tavi felt its presence behind him, bizarre and unworldly, disturbing as the legs of a fly prickling along the nape of his neck. When they were out of its sight, He felt himself relaxing and moving closer to Kitai out of reflex. As different as the other boy might be, he was more familiar, more friendly, than that bug-like creature entombing the crow within the glowing wax. Kitai looked back over his shoulder at Tavi and then past him, eyes wide. There was something in them. Tightly controlled terror, Tavi thought. He thought that Kitai looked a bit relieved to see Tavi standing so close to him, and the two boys exchanged a silent nod of acknowledgement to one another. Tavi felt the understanding between them without words needing to be said. Truce. Kitai let out a breath, slowly.
You must be quiet, he said, whispering, and move smoothly. They see sudden motions.
Tavi swallowed and whispered,
We're safe if we're still?
Kitai's face grew a shade paler. He shook his head, giving the gesture a circular accent to smooth it out.
They found even those who were still. I've seen it.
Tavi frowned.
They must have some other way of seeing. Smell, hearing, something.
Kitai rolled his head in the negative again.
I don't know. We do not stay where they are to learn of them.
He looked around and shivered.
We must be careful. It called. Others will come to search. They will be slow for now, but the keepers will come.
Tavi nodded and had to swallow and force himself to make the gesture slowly, not in nervous jerks.
What should we do?
Kitai nodded toward the ancient tree rising from the center of the forest.
We continue the trial, Aleran.
Maybe we shouldn't.
I will continue, Aleran. If you are too afraid to go on, then stay.
His lips curled in a mischievous sneer.
It is what I would expect of a child.
I am not a child,
Tavi hissed furiously.
I'm older than you. What are you, 12 years old? 13?
Kitai narrowed his eyes.
15,
he hissed. Tavi stared at the other boy for a moment, then started smiling. He had to struggle not to break out into sudden laughter. Kitai's scowl deepened.
What?
Tavi rolled his head in a slow negative and whispered, Nothing. Nothing.
Mad, Kitai said. You people are mad.
With that, he turned and glided deeper into the glowing forest. Tavi followed close behind him, frowning, struggling to keep the irrational laughter from his lips, his steps silent. After they'd put several dozen more yards between them and the keeper they'd seen, he reached back and unslung the pack Fade had pressed onto him from his shoulders. He opened it and rummaged inside. The pack contained 2 small jars of fine lamp oil, firestones in their 2-chambered black box, a small lantern, a box of fine shavings to serve as tinder for a fire, dried meat twisted into braids in a fashion odd to Tavi, 2 fine warm blankets, several slender lengths of wood that could be fitted together into a fishing pole, lines, and fine metal hooks. And at the bottom of the pack, a cruel, curved knife, heavy and with a spiked guard that covered the knuckles. It had a blade 2x the length of Tavi's entire hand, a combat weapon.
Where had Fade got something like that? Tavi wondered.
Why had the slave had this pack stored with such efficiency inside his chambers, presumably ready to go at a moment's notice? He had returned with the pack so quickly that he could not possibly have packed it. It had to have been ready to go. Tavi shook his head and almost bumped into Kitai, who had come to a sudden stop in front of him. He came to a halt, close enough to the other boy that he could feel the nearly feverish heat of the Marat's body.
What is it?
He whispered. Kitai shivered and moved his head almost imperceptibly. Tavi looked to his left, moving only his eyes. A keeper squatted on a gnarled root that rose from the forest floor, draped in a mantle of glowing croach not 10 feet away. Tavi looked the other way, seeking the nearest means of moving away from the keeper. A second spider-like creature sat on a low wax-shrouded branch, on level with Tavi's head. It let out a high-pitched chirrup, bobbing up and down on its knobby limbs. The first keeper answered it in a different pitch. It, too, began to bob in fluid, steady motions. Other chirrups sounded from around them, out of sight. Many of them. A great many. Tavi shuddered. He hardly breathed as he whispered, "What do we do?"
"I..."
Kitai shivered again, and Tavi saw that the other boy's eyes were wide, panicked.
"I do not know."
Tavi's eyes flicked back to the nearest of the two keepers. It shook its head, pale eyes peering this way and that, twitching in independent motion, a dark dot at their center, the only thing that resembled a pupil. Then as Tavi watched, something strange happened. The keeper's eyes changed color, right there before his own. They changed from a pale shade of maggot white to something as bright orange as a candle's flame. In that instant, the keeper went deathly still. Both eyes swung to orient on the boys, and it let out a piercingly loud whistle, something that sounded like a mad bird's scream. Kitai's breath caught in his throat, and the boy leapt forward. Tavi's eyes swept left to right, and he saw what the keepers did very clearly. The further keeper's eyes swirled to orange as well, and oriented immediately upon Kitai's form. It, too, let out a shrill, shrieking scream, and mirroring the first, started after the Marat boy with a deceptively languid, deadly grace. In that moment, Tavi saw exactly how the keepers had detected them, and how they might be able to thwart them. "Kitai!" he shouted, and then bounded after the other boy. "Wait!" More shrill whistles went up all around them as Tavi raced to catch up with Kitai. It was all but impossible. The Marat boy carried no pack and moved with the grace and speed of a terrified deer. Tavi could barely keep the Marat in sight as he ran, and all around him gathered the glowing orange eyes of the wax spiders, standing out in sharp contrast to the green glow of the croach. If Kitai hadn't tripped on a sudden dip in the croach, perhaps where one of the wax spiders had recently raised itself up out of it, Tavi didn't think he'd have caught up to the other boy. Instead, he swooped down and hauled Kitai to his feet by the boy's wild hair.
"Ow!"
Kitai hissed, eyes wild.
"Shut up," Tavi said, his voice sharp.
"Follow me."
Kitai blinked in startled surprise, and Tavi gave the boy no time to argue with him. He looked to his left and darted forward, tugging the other boy forward a few steps to get him moving, then sprinting as quickly as he could toward the rocky wall of the chasm. A keeper suddenly appeared on the ground in front of them. Tavi stifled his fear and kept running at the creature. The wax spider reared up onto its rear sets of legs as Tavi approached, but before he reached it, the boy began a spin, holding the heavy pack out in both arms. The pack almost pulled him off balance, but instead he took a pair of whirling steps and felt the weight of the pack slam hard into the creature. The keeper was lighter than it looked. The blow threw it to one side and slammed it hard into the wax surrounding a tree. It crumpled into the impact, legs curling up around it. Tavi ran on, and behind him, around them, the chirps of the keepers grew louder, more shrill, filled with what Tavi imagined must have been a chill and alien anger. They reached the stony cliff face, both of them panting. Tavi dropped the pack long enough to put both hands against the stone, staring up and then to either side of the face, studying the dark stone as best he could in the faint light of the glowing croach.
"The ropes are far from here," hissed Kitai. "There is no escape for us." "We don't need escape," Tavi said.
He pressed his mouth to the stone and touched his tongue to it briefly, then spat out the sour taste of lime.
"This way," he said.
He picked up his pack and continued on through the green light of the wax forest, the rocky wall on his left. He dug in the pack as he went.
"They are surrounding us," Kitai said, voice cool, "boxing us in."
"We don't need to get much farther," Tavi said. He tossed back one of the jars of oil to Kitai. "Hold that." The Marat caught the jar awkwardly, then scowled at Tavi as they both ran on.
"What is this?"
"Hold it a minute," Tavi said. "I have an idea." Orange eyes flickered on his right, and Tavi didn't see the keeper hurtling toward him until it was already halfway there. Kitai's foot kicked at his own and sent him stumbling to the forest floor. The spider hurtled over him, missing him by a hair. It landed on the wall, its legs clinging to the nearly vertical surface, then spun on all of its legs, whistling. Its mandibles clicked and snapped against its carapace. Tavi watched as Kitai drew his stone knife and hurled it. The glassy blade entered the creature's head, drawing a sudden fount of greenish glowing fluid, mixed in with something dark and acrid smelling. The keeper hurled its body out again, but unguided it simply bucked in a high arch and landed on the ground, twitching and convulsing. Kitai hauled Tavi to his feet and said, "I hope it is a good idea, Aleron." Tavi felt himself quivering with terror and nodded jerkily.
"Yeah, yeah, so do I."
He started running again, Kitai close behind him. The sound of trickling water came to Tavi a moment later, and he lengthened his strides, leaping over another twisted root. Before him, the rock wall had parted in a long, narrow fissure. Water trickled out of it in a slow, steady stream, meltwater from the ambient heat of the croach. At the base of the fissure was a long, narrow pool, an area where the croach had not grown over the bare earth. The pool looked hideously dark, and Tavi could not see how deep it was.
"We cannot climb this, Aleron," panted Kitai.
Another shriek sounded from near at hand, and Kitai twisted in place, body crouching in tension.
"Shut up," Tavi said. "Give me the oil."
He took the jar from Kitai's hand, jerked the broad cork out of its mouth. He turned to the area behind himself and Kitai and stomped hard on the ground several times, breaking the surface of the wax and drawing out more of the sludgy, glowing fluid. More outraged, chittering shrieks rose through the glowing forest.
"What are you doing?" hissed Kitai. "You show them where we are!"
"Yes," Tavi said. "Exactly!"
He dumped the oil onto the croach, into the depression his boots had made, and took the firestone box into his hand. He opened the two separate chambers and took the firestones into his hand, kneeling beside the oil. He looked up to see the glowing orange dots of dozens of eyes closing in on him with that same weird alien grace, knobby legs rippling across the surface of the croach.
"Whatever you are doing," Kitai half shouted, "hurry!"
Tavi waited until the eyes were close, and then he reached down to the oil and struck the firestones together. They sparked brightly, glowing motes falling down into the spilled oil. One of them found a spot where the oil was not deep enough to drown it, and in a rush, the whole of the small pool took sudden brilliant flame. Fire leapt up from the depression in the croach, as high as Tavi's chest. The boy recoiled from the flames, grabbed Kitai by the Marat boy's one-piece smock, and hauled him toward the pool. They tumbled into the cold water together, and Tavi pulled them both down. The water was shallow, no more than thigh deep, and viciously chill. Tavi and Kitai gasped together at the cold. Then the Aleran boys stared at the keepers. The wax spiders had gone mad at the kindling of the fire. Those nearest to him had fallen back and were scuttling in circles, letting out high-pitched shrieks. Others, farther back, had begun to bob up and down in confusion or fear, letting out high-pitched interrogative chirrups. None of them seemed to see either of the boys in the pool.
"It worked," Tavi hissed.
"Quick, here."
He reached into the pack and drew out both blankets. He shoved one at Kitai, then took his own and dipped it into the water. A moment later, he lifted it and draped it over his shoulders and head, shivering a bit with the cold.
"Quick," he said. "Cover up."
Kitai stared at him.
"What are you doing?" he hissed. "We should run while we have a chance. Quick, cover up."
"Why?"
"Their eyes," Tavi said. "When they were close to us, the color of their eyes changed. They saw you and not me."
"What do you mean?"
"They saw your heat," Tavi stammered, lips shaking with the cold. "The Marat. Your people feel like they have a fever to me. You're hotter.
the spiders saw you. Then when I lit the fire...
You blinded them, Katai said, eyes widening.
So soak your blanket in the water and cover up.
Clever,
Kitai said, with admiration in his voice. With a quick motion, he jerked the hem of his smock up out of the water in an effort to avoid wetting any more of it. He tugged it over his hips, then bent to dip the blanket in the water and shroud himself as Tavi had done. Tavi stared at the Marat in sudden shock.
Kitai blinked back at Tavi.
What is it?
I don't believe it, Tavi said.
He felt his face flush, and he turned away from Kitai, drawing the soaked blanket further about his face.
Oh, crows. I don't believe it.
Don't believe what, Aleran?
Kitai demanded in a whisper.
You're a girl!
Chapter 34 Kitai frowned, pale brows drawing together.
I am what? You're a girl,
Tavi accused.
No,
Kitai said in a fierce whisper.
I am a whelp. Until they bond, all Marat children are whelps. After I bond to a totem, then I will be a young female. Until then, I am a whelp like any other. Your ways are not our ways, Aleran.
Tavi stared at her.
But you're a girl.
Kitai rolled her eyes.
Get over it, valley boy.
She started to stand and move slowly up out of the water.
Wait,
Tavi hissed. He lifted a hand to block her way.
What? Wait until they've gone. If you go out there now, they'll see you.
But I'm covered by the cold blanket.
And if you walk in front of that fire, you'll be the only cold thing there, Tavi said. Stay here and be still and quiet. When the fire dies down, they'll spread out to look for us again and we'll have our chance.
Kitai frowned but slowly settled back into the water.
A chance to do what?
Tavi swallowed.
To get inside. To that big tree.
Don't be foolish,
Kitai said, though there was a reluctant weight to her words.
The keepers are roused.
No one has ever gone to the tree and come out again when the keepers had been stirred from sleep. We would die.
You forget. I'm going to die anyway.
He frowned.
But it might be just as well. I don't want to lead a girl into that kind of danger.
The Marat girl scowled.
As if I am any less able to defeat you now than a few moments ago.
Tavi shook his head.
No, it isn't that.
Then what is it?
He shrugged beneath the blanket.
I can't explain it. We don't treat our women the same way we do our men.
That's stupid, said Kitai. Just as it is stupid for us to pursue the trial. If neither of us comes back with the blessing, the trial is inconclusive. They'll wait until a new moon and hold it again. You will be Doroga's guest until then, Valley Boy. You will be safe.
Tavi frowned and swallowed, thinking. Part of him had all but let out a shout of relief. He could get out of this bizarre chasm with its alien creatures and return to the world above. It wasn't a friendly one among the Marat, but it was living, and he would at least be kept alive and unharmed until the next trial. He could survive. But the new moon wouldn't be for weeks. The Marat would move long before then. Attack Garrison and then the Steadholts in the valley beyond, including his own home. For a moment, Tavi's imagination conjured up an image of returning to Bernard Holt to find it deserted, thick with the stench of rotten meat and burned hair. To open one of the swinging gates and see a cloud of carrion crows hurtle into the air, leaving the bodies of people he had known his whole life, ravaged and unrecognizable on the cold earth. His aunt, his uncle, Frederick, Beritta, Old Bitter, and so many others. His legs started shaking, not with cold, but with the sudden realization that he could not turn his back on them now. If returning with that stupid mushroom meant that he would gain his family even a better chance to survive what was coming, then he could do nothing less than everything in his power to retrieve it. He couldn't back down now. He couldn't run now, even though it meant he might go into mortal danger. He might wind up like that crow, sealed into the crouch, devoured alive. For a moment the pale, coloured eyes of the keepers haunted his mind. There had been so many of them. There still were, gathered all around the now guttering fire, crawling mindlessly over one another in all directions, their long knobby legs falling feather-light onto the surface of the crouch. Their leathery shells made squeaking sounds as they crowded close, rubbed against one another. And they smelled something pungent and acrid and inexplicably alien. Even as he realized that he could smell them, Tarvi felt the hairs on the back of his neck prickle up, and his shivering increased in reaction.
"I have to go," Tarvi said.
"You'll die," Kitai said simply. "It cannot be done." She shrugged and said, "It is your life to waste. Look at you. You are shaking hard enough to rattle your teeth," but her odd, opalescent eyes stayed on him, intent, curious. She didn't speak the question, but Tarvi all but heard her ask, "Why?" He took a shuddering breath.
"It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter that I'm afraid. I have to get that mushroom and get out again. It's the only thing I can do to help my family."
Kitai stared at him in silence for a long moment. Then she nodded once, an expression of comprehension coming over her features. "Now I understand, Valley Boy," she said, quiet. She looked around them and said, "I do not wish to die. My family is not at stake. Freedom from my sire is useless to me if I am dead." Tarvi chewed on his lip, thinking. Then he said, "Kitai, is there any reason that we can't both get the blessing? What happens if we both get back with it at the same time?" Kitai frowned. "Then it will be assumed that the one tells us there is merit in either side's argument," she said. "The headman will be free to decide on his own."
"Wait," Tarvi said, his heart pounding faster. "You mean that you'd get out from under your father, and he would be free to lead your people away from the battle with mine?"
Kitai blinked at Tarvi and then smiled, slowly.
"By the One! Yes! That was his plan all along!"
She blinked her abruptly shining eyes several times and said fiercely,
"The problem is that Doroga does not seem to be clever. No wonder my mother loved him."
"Then we work together," Tarvi said.
He offered the girl his hand. She glanced down at his hand, frowned at him, and then mimicked the gesture. Her hand was slim, hot, strong. Tarvi shook and said,
"It means we agree to work together."
"Very well," Kitai said. "What do you think we should do?"
Tarvi shot a glance back to the keepers, who were slowly randomly dispersing again, crawling away in different directions and at different speeds.
"I have a plan."
An hour later, Tarvi, covered with the soaked and chilly blanket, moved in silence over the smooth surface of the crouch, his pace never varying. He kept count to himself as he walked, one pace per count. He was near 500. A keeper walked perhaps 10 feet in front of him, on a slow and steady pace toward the great tree at the center of the chasm. Tarvi had followed it for several minutes without it turning to look at him or giving any indication that it sensed his presence. He had become more confident that he had determined how the things would detect him. So long as he was careful to be quiet and moved smoothly, he was effectively invisible. The enormous tree loomed closer and closer, though the more Tarvi could see of it, the less certain he was that tree was the right word to describe it. Though the rest of the forest was covered in a sheath of the greenly glowing crouch, this one tree, smooth-sided, branchless, straight, was only covered to a height of 10 or 15 feet. The trunk was enormous, fully as big around as Bernard Holt's walls. It didn't look like it had any bark at all, just smooth wood that reached up to a height of more than 100 feet, before ending in round, irregular edges, as though the tree had been snapped off by some giant hand, then had its rough edges smoothed by time. At the base of the tree there was a cavernous opening. a sloped and irregular triangle where the trunk parted, allowing entrance to the interior. Tavi paused and watched the keeper he had been following. It paced slowly into the tree's interior, and as it passed within, another keeper moved out on the other side of the opening, as though it were a tunnel in the causeway. Tavi stopped for a few moments and watched. Shortly, the keeper he'd been following, or another like it, came out of the tree in exactly the same place. Still another came creeping in from another direction and entered the tree in exactly the same manner as the first, emerging again a few moments later. The keepers must have been taking something into the tree. But what? Something small, if they were just scuttling in and out like ants in and out of their hills. Food? Water? What did they carry? Tavi shook his head and touched the blanket with his fingertips. Though it was still cool, it didn't feel as cold as it had a few minutes ago. The air down here in the chasm was just too warm. He had to hurry, he knew, because with each passing moment his method of concealment became less effective. Tavi struggled to calm the pounding of his heart. What if these bugs were smarter than he thought? What if they had only allowed him to come this far because they wanted him there anyway? What if they just wanted to get him to a place where he could not escape and would then leap on him and devour him? And what, he thought, could possibly be there inside that tree? What would be there that the keepers would be carrying something to? If they were like ants existing in a colony where some carried food and some fought and so on, would they have a queen like ants did? If so, would she be inside the tree at the heart of their domain? A dozen more questions flicked through Tavi's mind before he realized that he was doing nothing but wasting his time. He didn't have any answers to any of the questions, and he wouldn't get the answers standing in place. All he would get would be warmer, more vulnerable. He kept counting in his head and reached 500. Tavi all but held his breath, poised to flee if the plan went wrong, though he knew that his chances of escaping from the heart of the chasm were slim indeed. Tavi waited. And waited. Nothing happened. He felt his heart begin to race as panic crept over him. Had Kitai abandoned him and her own part of the plan? Had something gone wrong? Had she been found and killed before the time limit was up? Could she even count to 500? What had gone wrong? Tavi remained still and kept counting, deciding to give her another 100 counts before he fled. Then the stillness and silence of the wax forest dissolved into a symphony of whistling shrieks. If Tavi had not seen it happening, he would never have believed that so many of the keepers could be so close to him without his knowledge of them. They erupted from everywhere, from every surface where the croach glowed, ripping their way up out of the waxy forest floor, dropping from the glowing branches of the twisted trees, boiling out of the interior of the great tree trunk itself. Hundreds of them appeared, and the air itself shook with their whistles and clicks, and the squeak of shell rubbing on shell. Tavi froze, panicked. It was everything he could do to keep from bolting at the sheer speed with which they had appeared. One of the keepers swept past him, almost close enough to brush against his soaked cloak. They all swarmed off in the same direction, that opposite of the one that led back to the ropes to the world above. Kitai had done her job, Tavi decided. She must have been keeping a slower count than Tavi had. She had used half of their remaining oil and the firestones to light a blaze that would draw the keepers. If she was all right and had kept to the plan, she would even now be huddled beneath her blanket, moving for the ropes out. The last of the keepers in sight fled, vanishing into the glowing trees. All that remained was for Tavi to accomplish his part of the plan. A lump crept up into his throat, and his knees felt like someone had simply slipped the muscles and tendons out of them. He thought that they might abruptly buckle and pitch him to the surface of the croach at any time, he was so afraid. He struggled to keep his breathing slow and quiet, to make sure that his trembling didn't result in any twitches that the keepers would see as sudden, jerky movement, and stepped forward into the trunk of the tree. Inside, The crouch wasn't in a smooth layer on the floor and walls. It was spilled and dumped and heaped and piled like wheat in a granary. Great swirling loops of it twirled up the walls or wound intricately through one another like the guts of some great and glowing beast. Tavi stared at them for a moment, in confusion and incomprehension. It was beautiful, in a bizarre alien way, strange and unsettling and fascinating. He jerked his eyes from one of the more intricate structures and moved closer to a wall, where it would be less likely for a newly entered keeper to simply bump into him, looking around, struggling to orient himself according to Kitai's description. He paced deeper into the eerie stillness inside the tree, around a mound of whirled crouch that looked like an anthill, and forward through a small field of lumpy crouch which could have contained another 1,000 keepers. Silent beneath the surface, he found the mushrooms in a ring at the center of the field, just as Kitai had said. They grew at the base of a glowing mound, twice the height of a man, as big around as a small house. The mound pulsed with greenish light, and Tavi thought he could see the shadow of something dark, something slender within. He drew closer, a sensation of raw dread flowing over him like an icy bath, even worse than the soaked blanket he wore as a cloak. His knees grew weaker, and his breathing, despite his best efforts, became ragged. Kitai was rather pretty, he thought. Though she was a savage, there was something about her face, her eyes, that he found intriguing. If she wasn't dressed up in a ragged smock, which really was shamefully short now that he thought about it, she might look more like a girl, less wild. Of course, he had begun to see her without the smock. If he had told her to get more into the water, she might have taken it off altogether. The thought made his cheeks burn, but lingered in front of him, enticing in its exotic appeal. Tavi shook his head abruptly. What was the matter with him? He had to be careful and get the blessing of night. The dark mushrooms had some kind of spiny thorns on their undersides, Kitai had said, which had pierced her hand once and left welts that lasted for months. He glanced up and around him, but saw no keepers. That could be an illusion, he knew. There could be a dozen within arm's reach. But no matter how afraid he was, Tavi had to press on. That was the history of his people, after all. The Alarans had never let fear or the odds of failure deter them from overcoming, prospering. Their oldest histories, his uncle had once told him, reached so far back into time that the hide and vellum and stone they had been scribed upon had worn away. They had come to Karna from another place, a small band of only a few thousand, and had found themselves pitched against an entire world. They had overcome the Icemen, the Children of the Sun, and their stronghold in the Feverthorn jungle, had repelled the Marat and the Karnim over the centuries to claim the land of Alera as their own. They controlled the seas around their home, had walled out the Icemen in the north, overcome the Marat through sheer savage fighting. With their furies and their fury crafting, the Alarans dominated the world, and no other race or peoples could claim mastery over them. Tavi shuddered and blinked his eyes several times. He must have stood there, his hand extended toward the first of the mushrooms, for nearly a full minute, not moving. What was the matter with him? The hairs on the back of his neck prickled up more sharply as he reached for the nearest mushrooms. He hurried, breath rasping, picking one, then another, careful to put them into the pouch at his belt. And then he thought he saw something in the great mound in front of him move. Tavi jerked his eyes up to it, flinching, and felt an immediate hot pain in the fingers of his hand. The thorns on the next mushroom had pierced him. He jerked his hand back, and droplets of his blood flashed out and arced through the air, sprinkling the glowing mound in front of him. Tavi stared at the mound, the droplets of his blood on it. The surface of the glowing crouch abruptly pulsed, bulged, and then rippled beneath the droplets of his blood, moving like the skin of some hideous, enormous creature, and making Tavi's own flesh crawl in response. He watched as the droplets of blood vanished into the mound, sinking into the surface of the croach like snowflakes into a still-melted pond. And the shadowy shape within the mound abruptly shuddered and moved. A slow unwinding of limbs, languid, liquid, as though from a sleeper that had, after an endless passing of seasons, finally awakened. It moved, and Tavi felt its movement, felt a vast, bewildering awareness that swept over him like the gaze of some ancient and horrible beast. Terror flooded over Tavi, raw and hot rather than cold, terror that set his limbs on fire and burned any thought from his mind save one. Escape. Tavi spun on his heel, and heedless of the danger in revealing himself, broke into a panicked sprint. He would remember little of his run later. One or two chirruping whistles, perhaps, echoed through the trees after him, but they were sparse, and he left them behind him, his steps light on the surface of the croach, terror lending him more speed than he would have credited to himself before that night. He flicked one glance over his shoulder as he ran, and saw something through the glowing trees at the base of the monolith, the opening he'd fled through. He saw something tall, glistening, alien. It stood just within the central tree, just behind the doorway. Tavi could not quite see it, but he could feel it in a way both horribly intimate and beyond simple description. The lower-pitched whistle that went out through the trees felt to Tavi like some sort of hideous, mocking laughter. Tavi fled, and did not look back again. He ran over the croach until his legs were burning and his limbs felt as though they would be ripped apart by the demands he placed on them. He almost didn't see the strip of blanket that he had torn off and tied to a low tree branch before he left to mark his way back. He headed for it, and from that flag spotted the next and the next, laying out his escape route back to the ropes at the base of the cliff. "Aleran!" came a voice from before him. Kitai dropped from a tree branch ahead of him. "Do you have it?" "Got two!" Tavi yelped. "Couldn't get any more!" Kitai extended her hand, and Tavi shoved one of the mushrooms into it. "Run! Go, go, go!" Kitai nodded once, then stooped to the ground. Tavi hesitated behind the girl, dancing in place as he looked back over his shoulder. "Hurry," he panted. "Hurry, hurry, hurry." Kitai drew out the firestones smoothly, her expression cool, and struck them together. Sparks fell from the stones onto the oil-soaked blanket that lay on the croach before them. Kitai watched the flames leap up, then moved quickly, reaching up to grab the end of the fishing line that Tavi had soaked in the icy water before he left. She jerked the line toward her, hand over hand. The other end of the line looped up over one of the higher branches of the tree, up where living leaves grew above the grasp of the croach, and then fell back down to where it was tied at one corner of the oil-soaked blanket. Kitai hauled the line in, and the blazing blanket rose up into the tree's branches and snagged among the living leaves. Fire leapt up from the tree in a blaze, sudden and high, and once again from the direction of the central spire, whistling shrieks rose up in a solid wall of terrifying sound, one underlaid this time by that deeper whistle, one that overrode the shrieks and continued over the silence. Kitai stared at Tavi, her eyes suddenly wide. "What is that?"
"I don't know," Tavi said, "but, I think I woke it up."
They looked at one another once more, and in silent accord turned together and fled toward the ropes a few yards away, toward the safety at the top of the cliffs. To either side of him, Tavi saw the keepers flooding toward the fire through the trees, closing on them in a carpet of glowing eyes and knobby limbs and leathery shells. Tavi had reached the ropes, and Kitai was only a few paces behind when something dropped down from one of the croach-shrouded trees above them, something tall and slender and horribly fast. Whatever it wasn't a keeper, because it reached out with one long limb and wrapped hard-looking, chitinous fingers around Kitai's ankle, hauling her to the ground. The girl let out a scream of sudden terror and twisted in that grip. Tavi only saw what happened in bits and pieces. He remembered turning to see something that he thought was like some kind of hideous wasp, semi-transparent wings fluttering in the glowing light of the croach. It bent over Kitai, weirdly humped shoulders flexing as its head whipped down as mandibles sank into her thigh. Kitai let out a horrible scream and struck down at the thing's head with her fists, once, twice. Then her eyes rolled back in her head and her body started jerking and twisting in helpless spasm, limbs flailing. She kept trying to scream, but the sound came out broken, irregular. The wasp thing, covered in the glowing slime of the croach, lifted its head and let out a signal whistle that echoed around the chasm like the tones of some vast bell. It shook blood from its mandibles, and Tavi caught a flash of multifaceted eyes, of some kind of yellowish fluid at the edges of Kitai's wounds.
"Valley boy!"
shouted a distant voice. Tavi looked up to see Doroga, one hand on the rope, leaning far out over the cliff. And even from so far below, Tavi could see that his face was anguished.
"Aleran! You cannot save her! Come up!"
Tavi looked back and forth between Doroga and the Marat girl on the ground, the horrible thing crouched over her twitching body. Terror rose through him, a horrible taste in his mouth, and he couldn't see, couldn't seem to focus his eyes. One hand tightened on the rope in helpless frustration. Kitai had saved his life. She had trusted his plan to get them both out of the chasm alive. He was the only one who could help her. Tavi let go of the rope. He turned and ran, not toward the thing crouched over Kitai, but past it, around several glowing trees and to the one they had set on fire. Keepers crowded in all around him. He could hear them coming through the forest toward him, shrieks and whistles resounding. Tavi leapt up to the lowest branches of the tree, hauling himself into them and started scrambling toward the top, toward the fire. Halfway there, he hauled himself up and found himself face to face with a keeper, which reared back from him in surprise, its mandibles clacking against its shell. Tavi didn't have time to think. His hand flashed to where he'd put Fade's wickedly curved knife at his belt. He slashed it at the creature's eyes. It scuttled back from him. Tavi followed it, wriggling forward, thrusting the knife at the thing's face. The keeper let out a shriek and fell backward out of the tree, its limbs flailing. It hit the ground 20 feet below with a crunch and a wet-sounding splat, and Tavi looked down to see it writhing on its back, legs flailing, its broken body trailing glowing fluids out onto the forest floor. Tavi heard more keepers coming. He hauled himself up higher into the tree until he reached a branch bare of the croach, slender and unable to support his weight. Farther out along the branch hung the burning blanket. Fire spread along it toward the trunk of the tree. Tavi hacked at the branch with the knife, the steel biting into the soft wood. Then he gripped the knife in his teeth and hauled at the branch with both hands. It swayed and then broke, peeling away from the tree. Tavi scrambled down, trailing the long branch with its flaming leaves, the oil-soaked blanket, and when he had reached the forest floor, he ran toward Kitai. The thing crouched over her saw him coming and turned toward him with a hiss, its mandibles spreading wide, along with its chitinous arms. Though its eyes glittered and reflected the light of the fire from 1,000 facets, it had a horribly slime-covered, unfinished look to it, as though it hadn't finished becoming whatever it was to be. Half-born, half-alive, the huge wasp thing rattled its wings in a furious buzzing sound and whistled to the keepers around them. Tavi screamed and swung the branch in a broad, clumsy arc, fire trailing. The thing hissed and drew back from the flames, jerking its wings back sharply. Tavi seized on the advantage, shoving forward with the branch and driving the hissing monstrosity back from Kitai's still form. The girl lay, pale and silent, her eyes open but unmoving, her chest heaving in labored breaths. Tavi slipped an arm beneath her, and in a rush of terror hauled her up onto his shoulder. He staggered beneath her weight, but grasped the branch and spun about, wildly swinging the blazing wood and leaves and blanket about him. The creature leapt lightly away from him, landing on the wall several yards down from the ropes, horrible eyes focused intently on him.
"Oh, crows," Tavi thought. "It knows. It knows I'm going for the ropes."
If he didn't move, he was finished. Even if the creature didn't leap on him, he would shortly be drowning in keepers. Even his terrified strength was beginning to fade, his body to burn under all the effort. He had to get Kitai to the ropes, at least. He could tie her foot and Doroga could haul her up.
Doroga.
Tavi looked up to the top of the cliff and saw Doroga's pale form there, staring down at them. Then the gargant headman shouted,
"Courage, valley boy!"
and vanished back over the lip of the cliff. There was still a chance. Shoving the branch in front of him along the ground, he rushed toward the creature, which scuttled nimbly up the wall, a crab-like sideways motion. Tavi looked above it to an outcropping of rock. No good. He had to get it to move toward him, toward the ropes. Tavi ground his teeth in frustration on the blade of the knife.
"Oh, furies, Kitai, I hope this works."
Gracelessly, he dumped the girl onto the ground, then leapt toward and grabbed the nearest rope and started climbing. The creature let out a whistle and scuttled toward him. He knew that he did not have a chance of escaping it, or of fighting it, there on the ropes, but he took the knife from his teeth and swiped it at the thing. It paused, hesitating just out of his reach, its horrible head tilted as though assessing this new threat.
"Doroga!" Tavi screamed. "There it is! There it is!"
From above came a slow and tortured scream, bellowing in Doroga's basso, filled with anger and defiance. Tavi would never have believed that a man could lift a boulder that large. But Doroga appeared at the top of the cliff again, bearing a stone the size of a coffin over his head, arms and shoulders and thighs bulging with effort. He flexed the whole of his body, a ponderous motion, and the huge stone hurtled down toward the creature. Its head abruptly whirled on its neck, whipping around to face directly behind it. The creature moved, its wings buzzing, but it was not fast enough to wholly escape the plummeting stone. It flashed by Tavi, missing him by the breadth of a few fingers. The creature leapt away from the wall, but the stone crushed against it, sending it spinning out of the air to land on the ground many yards away. The stone itself hit the ground and shattered, chips of rock flying, glowing slime from within the croach hurled into the air as from a fountain. Hot pain flashed along Tavi's leg, and he looked down to see his trousers cut by a flying piece of stone, blood on his leg. From above came Doroga's defiant howl of triumph, a bellowing roar that shook the walls of the chasm. The creature let out another whistle, this one higher, filled with fury, and Tavi thought with sudden fear. It staggered but could not rise, and instead began dragging itself back into the trees, as the glowing eyes of dozens of keepers began to appear behind it. Tavi dropped the knife, slid down the rope, and ran to Kitai. He seized her and began dragging her back toward the ropes, grunting with effort but moving quickly, jerking her over the ground.
"Aleran,"
she whispered, opening her eyes. Her expression was pained, weary.
"Aleran, too late. Venom, my father. Tell him I was sorry."
Tavi stared down at her.
"No," he whispered. "Kitai, no, we're almost out." "It was a good plan," she said.
Her head lolled to one side, eyes rolling back.
"No!" Tavi hissed, suddenly furious. "No, crows take you! You can't!"
He reached into his pouch, fumbling through it as tears started to blur his vision. There must be something. She couldn't just die. She couldn't. They were so close. Something stuck sharply into his finger, and pain flashed through him again. The crow's-eaten mushroom had jabbed him with its spines, the blessing of the night.
Fever, poison, injury, pain, even age. It has power over them all. To our people there is nothing of greater value.
Weeping, Tavi seized the mushroom and started tearing off the spines with his fingers, heedless of the pain. Shrieks rose all around him, came closer, though the still blazing branch seemed to have confused some of the keepers, to have temporarily slowed their advance. Tavi reached down and slipped an arm beneath Kitai's head, half hauling her up. He reached down to the wound over her thigh and crushed the mushroom in his hand. Musty-scented clear fluid leaked out from between his fingers and dribbled over the wound, mixing with blood and yellowish venom. Kitai's leg twitched as the fluid touched it, and the girl drew in a sudden breath. Tavi lifted the rest of the mushroom to her lips and pressed it into her mouth.
"Eat it," he urged her. "Eat it, you have to eat it."
Kitai's mouth twitched once and then began to chew automatically. She swallowed the mushroom and blinked her eyes slowly open, focusing them on Tavi. Time stopped. Tavi felt himself staring down at the girl, suddenly aware of her, entirely aware of her in a way he never had been aware of anyone before. He could feel the texture of her skin beneath his hand, and felt the abrupt compulsion to lay his fingers over her chest, to feel the beat of her heart beneath it slowly gaining in strength. He could feel the surge of blood in her veins, the fear and regret and confusion that filled her thoughts. Those cleared as her eyes focused on him, widened, and Tavi realized that she had felt his own presence in the same way. Not moving her eyes from his, Kitai reached out a hand and touched his chest in response, fingers pressed close to feel the beating of his heart. It took Tavi a frozen, endless moment to separate the beating of his own heart, the rush of blood in his own ears, from hers. They beat together, perfectly in time. Even as he realized it, his own heartbeat began to speed, and so did hers, bringing a flush of heat to his face. One answered in her own expression. He stared at the wonder in her eyes and saw that it could only be a reflection of that in his own. The scent of her, fresh and wild, curled up around him, through him, like something alive. The shape of her eyes, her cheeks, her mouth. In that single moment he saw in her the promise of the beauty that would come in time, the strength that had still to grow, the courage and reckless resourcefulness that matched his own and flamed wild and true in her. The intensity of it made his eyes blur, and he blinked them, tried to clear the tears from them, only to realize that Kitai was blinking as well, her eyes filling with tears, going liquid and blurry. When Tavi had blinked the tears away, his eyes returned to hers, only to find not opalescent swirls of subtle shifting color, but wide pools of deep emerald green. Eyes as green as his own.
"Oh, no!"
Kitai whispered, her voice stunned, weak.
"Oh, no!"
She opened her mouth, started to sit up, then shuddered once and slumped in his arms, abruptly overwhelmed with exhaustion. The frozen moment ended. Tavi lifted his dazed head to see the first of the keepers edging past the blazing blanket and branch. Tavi hauled himself to his feet, lifting Kitai, and stumbled toward the ropes. He stepped into the loop at the base of one, then reached over to the other and wrapped it around his waist, around her legs, tying her to him. Even before he was finished, Doroga had started hauling the rope up the face of the cliff. The other rope came in as well, where Hashat must have been pulling it along to keep it tight. Tavi held on to the rope, and to Kitai, not really sure which one he held tighter. He closed his eyes, overwhelmed, and did not open them again until he and Kitai sat at the top of the cliff in the cold, fresh, clean snow. When he opened his eyes again, he sat with his back against a stone and idly noted the fresh earth beside him, where Doroga had uprooted the boulder and hurled it down. A moment later he realized that Kitai lay against his side, beneath one of his arms, warm and limp, half-conscious. He tightened his arm on her, gently, confused, but certain that he wanted her to sleep, to rest, and to be right where she was. Tavi looked up and found her